electric cars, solar, wind, and even nuclear for the grid, and eating less meat, all ways to reduce a carbon footprint.
But what happens if one part of the economy puts out more climate-threatening emissions?
And could that one part push not only Canada, but the entire world into irreversibly severe climate change? I'm Adam Toy.
And I'm Dave McIver, and this is Why. The world has a carbon problem, but Canada's seems especially acute.
According to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, in order to keep global warming under 1.5 degrees, there's only so much in emissions we can put out into the atmosphere. And we're getting surprisingly close.
And according to a recent paper from the Cascade Institute, oil and gas production in this country could use up an outsized amount of the global carbon budget if government policy doesn't change.
Truzar Doherty is a PhD candidate currently studying at the University of Waterloo, and he's a top 30 under 30 sustainability leader with the Corporate Knights magazine, and joins us to explain this paper. Thank you so much for your time, Truzar.
Thanks for having me.
At the start of any sort of paper or any sort of research project, there's always a hypothesis that you try to find the answer to. What was that hypothesis? What was that problem you were trying to solve in this paper?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think our motivation really sort of came from the recognition that Canada's climate strategy in its current state, though ambitious, is, we believe, not enough to meet our global commitments. It's in part because fossil fuels are not explicitly considered as a climate strategy.
So they're not part of Canada's climate strategy, you're saying there. It's fascinating because, I mean, to do a bit of background, Canada has they signed on the Paris Climate Accord to try to reduce emissions and get to net zero by a certain year, along with, you know, hundreds of other countries or dozens, if not more than 100 other countries around the world. So you're saying, or in this paper, it's saying that oil and gas production run counter to that goal. Is that right?
Yeah. So sort of the framing of this paper around sort of the one eye shut is to sort of infer that the government, as of its current strategy, is not addressing that lead cause of climate change, the fossil fuel industry. Which in turn would make it increasingly challenging to meet those Paris target climate goals.
And how Canada's production of oil and gas could take up a significant portion of the world's carbon budget.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the global carbon budget is the total amount of carbon emissions that we can extract into the atmosphere to safely meet certain targets, whether that's a 1.5 degree climate target or a 2 degree climate target. And according to a new study in Nature that was released this year, we know that in order to have a good chance, a 67% chance of meeting our 1.5 degree target, no more than 230 gigatons of carbon can be burnt altogether. And Canada's plan is quite straightforward. We plan on burning 26 gigatons of oil over the next 30 years and 10 gigatons of gas over the next 30 years. So with that, the math was pretty straightforward. 36 gigatons of the 230 gigatons that are permissible to be released accounts for about 16% of the carbon budget.
So if that ends up being true and Canada could take up to 16% of the world's carbon budget by 2050, what do you propose to address that?
I think, you know, broadly speaking, we need greater supply side policy. And what I mean by supply side policy is policy that over time restricts fossil fuel production towards a managed wind down. There are several different ways of doing that. One could be removing fossil fuel subsidies, estimated to be around $18 billion. We could have more stringent regulations in place as to how much can be produced, or we can also incentivize the private financial sector to be more prudent in how they lend and invest in the fossil fuel industry.
So you're saying that there could be some government side interventions to reduce that production. So do you think that if the free market was just allowed to run as it seems to be trending now, with a lot of capital market, a lot of large equity players are divesting investments, they're getting out of oil and gas companies, is that alone going to do enough to reduce oil and gas emissions or the production emissions?
Yeah, it's an interesting point in time that we're in right now with movers around the world, countries, institutions appearing to move away from fossil fuels, perhaps much quicker than initially anticipated. I think, if I remember correctly, the International Energy Association projects that demand will plateau in the next decade for fossil fuels. I believe market forces in and of itself will play a significant role in providing an even more ambitious target than we currently have in front of us. The problem specifically is that along this transition, if there is any oil that's going to be left on the table, it's going to be from high cost, high emitting sources like Canada. And so we're already starting to see the effects of this in recent years with the exodus of fossil fuel majors, as well as private financing away from the oil sands. So certainly that will play a role. However, I think policy is incredibly effective in accelerating that trajectory.
Speaking of policy, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau recently announced Canada's goal of reducing emissions by 40 to 45% in less than 10 years. What kind of effects can these statements have?
When Canadians elected us 5 years ago, our emissions were projected to keep rising through 2030. But with hard work and a solid plan, Canada is now on track to blow past our old target of 30% reduction below 2005 levels. Last December, we strengthened our climate plan to reduce more emissions, including with a world-leading price on pollution. This week, we made additional investments in the budget, and today, Canada is in a position to raise our climate ambition once again. Our new climate target for 2030 is to reduce our 2005 emission levels by 40 to 45%. And we will continually strengthen our plan and take even more actions on our journey to net zero by 2050.
It's great to hear the for some context about the commitment. Monday's budget included measures to reduce emissions by 36% by 2030. Thursday's climate commitment was at least 40%, aiming for 45%. And this is, the most aggressive climate strategy Canada has committed to date. 36 to 40% may not be enough, especially compared to our allies. We are still laggards, and scientists in Canada are calling for closer to 60% reductions is what would be needed. I think it'd also be worth mentioning that, we're 16% or 16 years past the 2005 initial starting point, and we have increased emissions every year since then. So we have 9 years left to meet this target. A few other pieces, I guess, just sort of on the budget, the $17.6 billion towards climate action that we saw on Monday. Again, perhaps, what's most telling about this budget is the limited reference to fossil fuel production directly. The money will be used to reduce fossil fuel demand, invest in low carbon energy sources and climate adaptation, but not directly towards reducing the supply of fossil fuels. So the question is, can this be achieved without supply side restrictions? From my understanding, Canada is doing quite well in reducing absolute emissions from other sectors like electricity, for example, in recent years. But all these gains have been offset by a rise in emissions from the oil sands. I think a quote that really stuck with me by David Hughes is, to maintain fossil fuel production, we would need an economic contraction larger than the Great Depression in order for the rest of the economy to carry the disproportionate share of emissions reductions. So, you know, bottom line, this is a great step forward, a big one, but it is also a continuation of this one eye shut climate policy that doesn't include supply side policy solutions.
As I mentioned earlier, I'm in Calgary. You're probably not that far from the Waterloo campus, I imagine. For my entire life, there's been talk about, how the need to go more green. And while this province is, in Alberta, it's Canada's primary producer of oil and gas. So I'm just going to throw a couple of comments, questions that I've heard that are counters or potential counters to this argument to go green. First is the livelihoods part of it. Have you traveled to Alberta? Have you spoken with Albertans, small town Albertans, for whom their primary household income is thanks to oil and gas? And what did you have you been able to do that?
I haven't, but I certainly acknowledge that aspect, and I'm happy to speak to it now. Or
yeah, please.
Sure. The fossil fuel industry undoubtedly plays a central role in sort of this the Canadian zeitgeist, right? The Canadian spirit, the Canadian-ness, and there are several reasons for that. From what I've seen, one being inertia, right? Canada is a fossil fuel producing nation. It's what we've done historically. It's what we do today. It's an important part of the Canadian economy. The other piece is influence. The industry does influence Canadian policy, and our research, for example, showed that the industry met with policymakers 4.5 times per day in 2020. So of course, there's a strong connection there. And the third being the Canadian psyche, and it would be incredibly disingenuous of me to sort of underplay the important role of fossil fuels in many Canadians' national identity and livelihoods, and certainly more so in Alberta. It's acknowledging that first and foremost. Within that framework, sort of moving forward, we've seen that the world appears to be moving away from fossil fuels quicker than anticipated. And along that transition, some of these resources will be stranded, right? Will remain underground because there's just not the demand for it, or it's not economically viable to produce it. These resources are going to come from high cost, high emitting sources, like the Canadian oil sands. We're starting to see the effects of that now with individuals losing their jobs, and the province, these changes cutting into the province's revenue streams. And I also want to highlight that, these effects are not going to be limited to just fossil fuel workers. It's certainly going to be affecting the entire economy, as we're so interdependent on the fossil fuel industry. But at the same time, we're also equally interdependent on the world and the trajectory the world is taking. So I would be, particularly mindful in sort of raising that lens that, as the world moves away from fossil fuels, chances are we may be close to the front of the line, and that is going to affect Canadian jobs and Canadian revenue.
Have you given much thought in terms of how technology can help with reducing emissions from oil and gas production? In your paper, you say that carbon capture and sequestration don't really cut it.
So both blue hydrogen and hydrogen, green hydrogen and carbon sequestration are technological solutions that certainly we need to continue investing in towards the future if we are going to address the carbon emissions that are in the air right now and start restricting those. The real difference here is, on one hand, we're talking about emissions intensity, how much can we reduce the emissions intensity? And on the other hand, we're talking about absolute emissions. Can we put a limit to the absolute emissions that are being emitted? If these technologies like hydrogen and carbon sequestration reduce the absolute emissions, I think those are good solutions. From my understanding, where we're at currently is carbon sequestration is using carbon that is currently sequestered in the ground towards enhanced oil recovery, which in turn increases fossil fuel production. Similarly with blue hydrogen, it's used in the production process to, yes, reduce emissions intensity, but also continue the absolute amount of fossil fuel production that's released.
You've got years, a good few years of publishing on fossil fuel divestment, transitioning to a low carbon economy and that sort of thing. Through all of this time that you've been doing this work specifically, have you seen sentiment from politicians? How have you seen that changed?
I think I've seen a positive transition around the world. There's no question about it. We're moving in the right direction. I think 2015 was certainly a pivotal year with the Paris Agreement, and it's sort of brought attention to a lot of climate cries that activists and NGOs have been asking for and calling for all these years. I think there seems to be greater recognition that, you know, whatever strategy we have, climate change needs to be a part of that, and that, you know, it seems to be across political boundaries. I think what's particularly interesting is the expansion of the private sector and their involvement in the climate crisis, and recognizing that moving away from the fossil fuel industry actually is financially favorable. It has higher returns, and a lot of the banks have consequently not only started to change their policies around energy financing, but also put forth sort of 2050 net zero targets in order to meet those goals and expanded. So it's an interesting point in time where we have both the governments as well as the private sector acting in accordance towards decarbonization.
Why did you get into this work? You've built up a body of work, as I alluded on your Google Scholar page. Like, why did you start down this whole path of economics and the environment?
Yeah, I was fortunate during my undergrad to have the opportunity to take many courses in both economics and environment. And I found gaps in both. Economics often, we're sort of talking like early 2010s here. I'm sure much has changed, but economics generally fails to incorporate environmental externalities. The conversation of carbon as a pollution is still relatively frequently discussed in environmental economic discourse. And on the opposite side, we have the environmental courses where, the solution is often as simple as, planting trees, and, we can save the world through that lens. And both are flawed in their own way, but both can complement and inform each other. So the opportunity I had both in my master's and PhD to pursue what we call multidisciplinary research, I think is what really sort of drew me towards this, to be able to bring those two ideas together.
This is Why is produced by me, Adam Toy, and Dave McIver. It's a national radio show and a podcast.
You can reach us by email at thisiswhy@globalnews.ca and on Twitter at thisiswhy.
If you like what you hear and want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to This Is Why so you never miss an episode. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend.
Thanks for listening. Wash your hands, wear a mask, and get vaccinated if you can. We'll see you soon.
Hi. Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.